The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today, we are talking about sex education in Black and Latino communities and why the world needs more non-white sex educators. With an expert on the subject, Bianca Loriano, and she's going to join us in just a minute. But first, I've got a bunch of things to tell you. We're live, so if this is a topic close to your heart and you've got an opinion or you've got a question, you can give us a call, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. So I got a question by email about last week's show, and if you listened to it, I was talking with Cooper Beckett about his new memoir, My Life on the Swing Set, and we took a bunch of listener questions, and one of the questions was about a triad that was changing into a V. And the person wrote to me and said, you never explained what a V was. So I apologize. For that person and anyone else who was confused, a V is a certain style of triad. So a triad is when three people are all involved with one another. And if you have the V style, it means that at the point of the V is one person who's involved with two other partners at the ends of the V. But those two partners are not romantically and sexually involved with one another. They're only romantically and sexually involved with the point of the V. So that is one type of triad style. In some triads, all three people are all involved with one another. That's what a V is. And thanks for asking the question and keep those questions coming, people. Okay, I want to tell you about a bunch of events, and I hope you'll mark them down in your calendars. Sex Out Loud is the premier sponsor of a great new event coming up in July. It's a one-day symposium called Affirming Polyamorous and Non-Monogamous Relationships. The symposium will be held on July 24th in Dallas, Texas. But if you're not in Dallas, it's also going to be broadcast as a live webinar. Ruby B. Johnson and Sean Chrisman are co-presenters. They're offering education and best practices for working with this emerging community. For more information, go to the website polydallas2015.com. Follow them on Twitter at polydallas2015. And so this is a great program for all kinds of service providers, whether you're a medical or a health provider, whether you're a therapist. This is especially good for therapists who want to become more fluent in talking about open relationships and ethical non-monogamy. And Ruby Johnson is just a really incredible activist in Dallas who talks a lot about cultural competency when it comes to communities of color around things like polyamory and kink. So this is going to be a really good event. Dallas certainly needs it. And the rest of you who aren't in Dallas, you can see it online. Okay, that's polydallas2015.com. Then there's Amorous Revolt, a brand new queer kinky camping event happening from July 31st to August 2nd. This event is designed by queer people for queer people to build and foster intentional communities for support, education, and play. Amorous Revolt features skill shares and workshops, including kink, crafts, health, life skills, and spirituality, as well as networking events, dance parties, and performances. In an effort to make the event as accessible as possible, they've organized a rideshare system, ASL interpreters, a 24/7 medical staff, and an emotional support space. They also have community-organized cabins, play, and workshop spaces specifically designated for people of color, trans people, gender nonconforming people, sober folks, and neurodiverse folks. So there's a lot of thinking and a lot of awareness that's gone into planning this event. This is really, it's the first year, but already they're way ahead of the game. And I think it's going to be really fantastic. Go to amorousrevolt.com and you guys can use the code Tristan for $10 off your registration. And then finally, I hope you're going to join me in Burbank, California this September, the 10th to the 13th. Along with some of the top names in the field of sexuality at Catalyst Con West, which is a 3-day conference that was created to inspire exceptional conversations about sexuality. There's more than 70 speakers presenting over 40 sessions on topics like sex education, erotic writing, sex positive parenting, and slut shaming. It's going to be held at the Los Angeles Marriott Burbank Hotel. For more information, go to catalyst.com. Use the code Tristan for $10 off your registration. Are you sensing a theme here, people? And I have two pre-con workshops, one on September 10th, the other on September 11th. These are the level 1 and 2 of my sex educator boot camps. This is professional training for sex educators. And it's really jam-packed. People give me incredible feedback on this. It's one of my favorite things that I'm teaching right now. So please go check out the descriptions for my boot camps on the CatalystCon website and sign up, and hopefully I will see you there. And we've also got some scholarships for the boot camps. So there's instructions on the website, but I will tell you that folks who specifically serve underserved communities can write to me and apply and hopefully get in for free. Okay, remember, we're live, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Let me tell you about today's guest. Bianca Laureano is an award-winning Latinegra sexologist who has been in the U.S. sexology field for over 15 years. Her background is in Black and Latin sexualities, education, media justice, and youth culture. She lives in New York City, where she provides education, consultation, training, and skill shares on various topics in the sexuality field. Bianca earned a BA in Women's Health and Latino Communities, as well as an MA in Women's Studies from the University of Maryland and an MA in Human Sexuality Education from NYU. She's co-directing a feature-length documentary film called Black Pervert about the intersections of Black and kink communities, and she's a founding member of the Women of Color Sexual Health Network, as well as the website latinosexuality.com. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Bianca.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So one of the things that I read about you in doing research for this was that your parents had books like Our Bodies, Ourselves and The Joy of Sex. And so you self-educated through reading, which is exactly the same way that I did it. People think I had this, you know, grew up in this really open atmosphere of like, you know, great in-depth talks about sexuality, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. So what got you interested in the field of sexuality as your passion and profession?
Right. You know, it's interesting. I grew up in the DC area, and it was at a time in the early 90s where people who identified as Latino were now being seen in research. And terms like machismo were coming up. And, you know, I grew up with immigrant family. I had a stay-at-home dad who was an artist for the first part of my life in my adolescence. So I just didn't understand this term that people were using to define me and my experience and my family. And then came a focus on young Latino girls who were becoming pregnant. And that also wasn't my experience. So I was looking at this research and thinking they're getting it wrong and it's written by outsiders. And so that kind of started my interest in the field, is examining why are people telling a story that's not mine, and why are people trying to assign the story to me versus me telling my own story. And I really wanted to shift that. And I was probably about 16 years old when that happened, and I knew that there was a connection between sexuality, sexual orientation, power. And so that is what really led me into the field. So I knew early on, and I got involved in peer education programs. And when I got into my undergraduate degree, I got involved with the health center there and running peer education programs as well. So that started my process in my community and in the field.
And that fits nicely into what you do at your day job, because like many sex educators, you wear a lot of different hats and you have a lot of different jobs. Yes. But tell me about the work you do with Scenarios.
Sure. So with Scenarios, I'm the director of education and regional programs. And Scenarios is a media justice and media making organization. And we create films that young people write, and we partner them with Hollywood directors. And what I then do is take those films and the major themes that come up in the films and create a curriculum around them that is rooted in social emotional learning. And that's just one way of helping young people think about themselves, think about their place in the world, and how they interact with other people to increase empathy and compassion. So Scenario started out as a sex ed organization to really revolutionize how we do sex ed in the U.S. 16 years ago, and we've evolved into classrooms, period, not just sex ed or health classrooms. So it's a great connection for the work that I've done and the work that I want to do in the future. So I'm really excited to be there, and I think it's a good place for me to be right now.
And what is that like working with young people where essentially you're not up in front of the room lecturing to them, you're actually facilitating them making their own media about this stuff?
Right. It's a mashup. Sometimes I do go into a classroom to help a teacher who's struggling or maybe needs some support. I also do a couple of conference presentations centering and focusing on young people who are in the audience as participants. But primarily, I do train teachers on how to work with young people in the classroom and to make their classroom a space where they can have conversations that are difficult with a trusted adult. So that it's been an interesting mashup of that. I also have taught college courses. So my teaching has just expanded, but I still am connecting with young people in many different ways. So I love young people. I especially love middle and high school ages. And I know some people... but it's just a great age, and it's really an amazing time to help a young person think about really complicated topics in a way that makes them feel that they have control and power on their own actions and, you know, shifting what they want to change in their community to make it more just and inclusive.
And it seems to me it's a crucial time, because as someone who teaches, everyone I teach is college age or older. I mean, I am sure you know this, having been, doing college classes. College kids are high school kids who didn't have any sex education. Like you kind of see the direct result of the lack of comprehensive sex education when you start talking to college kids, because they really don't know that much.
It's true. And I have tons of examples of that in my classroom, to the point where my students were disappointed that we had to talk about biology and not actual other topics about sex and sexuality. And, you know, there's just expectations about what they think they should learn. And then they're just shocked at how complicated sexuality and human sexuality really is. So yes, you are totally right.
Okay, we're going to take a break. And remember, we're live. So during the break, you could dial up your phone, people, and call us and talk to me and talk to Bianca. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Otherwise, don't go anywhere. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Lots of people talk about publishing their work, but have no idea where to start. If you are one of these aspiring authors or know somebody who is, don't miss Publishing Today Radio with Athena Dean Holtz. Thought leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, and in general, storytellers all want to get their messages in print, and that includes branding and marketing. Athena and her guests are here to answer your publishing questions and more. Tune in every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we're talking with Bianca Laureano, who is a sex educator, activist, and something I want to talk about right off the bat, which is a founding member of the Women of Color Sexual Health Network. Bianca, tell me how this came about.
Sure. Gosh, it was so long ago, it feels like. So about 7 years ago, I decided that I wanted to get ASEC certification, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, which is currently meeting now in Minneapolis. And so I went to Phoenix, Arizona, and I did a SAR, and I, you know, attended to try to get the continuing education credits. And I was really struck by how many people were there. There was about 500 people. And it's Phoenix, Arizona. So to me, that's Mexico. But I was also really shocked at how many people of color were not present. And there were probably about, I would say about 18 women of color there. And we just kind of all migrated to each other. And from there, we decided as a collective that we wanted to have greater representation, increase the numbers of women of color who are in the field, who are either presenting, who are being employed, who are writing about these topics connected to sexuality. And that was really the birthplace of WOCSHN, which is how we pronounce the acronym. And since then, there's been three of us that have maintained the work to establish WOCSHN as the organization that we know it is today. That's myself, Mariata, and Trina. And we've expanded to include an executive committee of four other people. So we're definitely growing, and we've had a lot of movement in the past several months. So it's a really exciting time for us. But our main goals are to increase the representation of women of color in the sexuality field, as well as challenging the white supremacy that makes it possible for us not to be present. So those are our major, major goals.
So you wrote this great piece on cosmopolitan.com called Why We Need More Non-White Sex Ed Teachers. Answer that question for me. Why do we?
So, yeah, that was an interview, as told to. And
you know, they were really interested in the work by the Women of Color Sexual Health Network. And it was based on my experience as well, being an educator in the classroom, and how my students of color receive me in a very different way than they've ever received a teacher before. Because for many students, they don't always have a professor of color who affirms their identity, who is able to communicate with them at the level that they're at, and just really understand other types of interactions that they have outside of the classroom with other people and with larger systems. That's one thing, is affirming young people, but people in general. But also because I think it's really important to have a mentor that you can connect with. And that's something that I didn't really ever have as someone going into the sexuality profession. And, you know, I wish I did. And that's one of the reasons why I continue to do the work that WalkShin does, is because just because I had a particular experience doesn't mean that I think it's a rite of passage for everyone after me. And I really want to change that so that young people and people interested in coming into the field are able to reach out, have conversations with people who may understand what their challenges are, what type of resistance they might come to, but then also to get some mentorship around how to manage things like building a website or coming up with headshots, you know, where to, you know, sell your writing if that's something that you want to do. So for me, it's really about affirming identities and reminding people that the power that people of color have exists, and we've been here forever, but also to shift the way that we think about power and who has power and knowledge. And I think for many people in the United States, when it comes to sexuality education, we don't always envision people of color doing that work, but we are. And that to me is really important, is increasing that representation.
And are there also things that you believe that white sex educators are getting wrong about the sexuality of Black and Latino people?
I don't think the word's wrong. I think the word is what's missing, right? So I think for me, when I was doing sex ed in East Harlem, where a majority of my students were young Black students, Puerto Rican students, Dominican students, they had very different needs. And so using a peer-reviewed, evaluated, supported sexuality education curriculum totally didn't speak to them the way it might speak to young people in Maine or Iowa or the suburbs of Florida. And so, you know, it's a really different experience to have immigrant parents, to not speak English as a first language, and to be a body that's constantly policed and monitored. So I had to do addendums to the activities and the conversations about body autonomy or about sexual assault, and actually had to include 3 sessions about how to interact with law enforcement and what that means and what do you do if law enforcement violates your body, and you know, who do you go to then? And those are the conversations that I think are missing from sexuality education. And I think those are also the conversations that are really difficult and challenging for racially white educators to have with young people of color if they've never experienced that themselves. And so it's hard to have those complicated conversations when you're an outsider. And I recognize that as well. Like, I'm not a parent. So, you know, I don't go into conversations about parenting suggestions without being clear and transparent that I'm not a parent. I have been a caregiver and I have raised children in a variety of ways. So I recognize that I don't know it all when it comes to many different things. But there's some things that I think are missing and that can really be done best by people who have had those experiences or understand the systems and the interlocking ways that people's experiences are impacted by race, class, gender, sexual orientation, and result in very specific experiences that just aren't captured in a traditional sexuality education curriculum.
And do you think that there's, you know, an assumption there somehow that, you know, we all have these bodies and we all have these desires, and therefore sex ed is some kind of universal. There is some kind of universal when it comes to sex.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I definitely think that ideally that would be a great place for us to start in the United States. I just don't think we're there yet. There's just a lot of fear and a lot of shame that's still being perpetrated. And unfortunately, it impacts the most under-resourced people to begin with. So working poor and working class people, people with disabilities, people who are incarcerated. And, you know, those people are rarely ever represented. I remember, you know, I still do HIV education in New York City public schools. And a lot of the time, we're expected to go into a classroom assuming that everyone in the room is HIV negative, which is a huge disservice and injustice for the messages that we want to share around prevention, safety, resources that are available, communication. And it's a really different conversation to have as an HIV positive person disclosing information and safety compared to someone who believes their status to be negative. So those are just some examples of what I've come into contact with. But yeah, I think that there's a variety of challenges, and the work that's being done currently to encourage sexuality education being comprehensive is really great. I think we just need to take it to a next level, because for me, comprehensive education needs to address, you know, violence by law enforcement. It needs to address deportation and detention and, you know, intra-racial violence. And it really doesn't do that just yet.
Well, right. There's not necessarily a social justice framework. And so I think in some ways, like, the default of sex education in the U.S. is very, is white, but not over, like, it doesn't call itself white sex education, but it doesn't necessarily address structural issues and how those structural issues can impact how people do or do not experience their bodies or experience pleasure.
Exactly. Right. There is no justice framework, unfortunately, that has been valued or upheld. But folks like us who are doing the work on the ground in a grassroots way, we've already created that for ourselves. So I feel like it's just a matter of these, you know, entities and these colleges and universities and whoever, like, gives the stamp of approval to recognize the knowledge and the power and all the things that communities have already created for themselves, and to value that, and then to have us work within our own communities to do that work. And, you know, that's a challenge. I struggle with that as well, because what does that mean around, you know, attribution, and what does that mean about who gets paid, and who owns this and who owns that? And it gets really, really complicated. But yeah, I would love for there to be a justice-centered approach to sex ed that a variety of people choose to push forward, because I think that that's really necessary. And it's important for everybody, not just people of color. But it's important for us all to understand that justice and equity is really benefiting all of us at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. But we have lots more to talk about, and I've been getting your questions on email and Twitter. You can keep them coming, or even better yet, pick up the phone and talk to us. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. We will be back with Bianca after this break.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
How do you achieve the utmost success in your life, career, faith, relationships, and more?
It's all here in The Business of Living with host Scott Ventrella. Scott has experience as an executive coach, sought-after speaker, and lecturer. He and his guests will offer practical solutions and strategies to help you move to the next level of success, no matter where you are in your life and career. The Business of Living airs live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking with sexologist Bianca Laureano, and we've been talking specifically about sex education in Black and Latino communities today. Right before I went on the air, I got an email, Bianca, and in it, it was a porn email, but in it, it was advertising a movie called 8th Street Latinas, Volume 33, where you'll find Miami's hottest Latinas. These girls are tan and packing that ass. Really hot stuff. That's obviously a quote. So I just was struck. I mean, it was like sort of perfect timing. I was like, oh, look, representations of Latina sexuality, for example, in porn. What are your thoughts on how these affect actual Latina girls and women's sexual self-images?
You know, it's really interesting because porn has shifted so much from when I was first consuming it. Because for me, like, Vanessa Del Rio rocks my world, still does. She really was the image that made me think, oh, somebody like me can have this power and can really devour anyone in a room. And that was really amazing. And to this day, I still have my VHS tapes of some of her early stuff. So I love a lot of different types of porn. I think what's complicated, especially now with our new high tech or the futuristic space that we're in right now, is that porn now has a different life. And it's accessible in so many different ways. And I think the impact varies depending on the individual. And I know a lot of folks, and there are many young people, who are very active in trying to shift the representation of porn, how it's very one-dimensional, and how it impacts Latinas negatively. And, you know, it's true. There are negative impacts that come up with porn, and the representation is very one-dimensional. And at the same time, I look at the porn that's available for other racial groups. And, you know, it's not like we're being targeted necessarily for, as one particular group of people. I mean, we are being focused on for being members of our community. But at the same time, I think the bigger problem is that it's a one-dimensional representation. There's only one look. There's only one type of Latina. And that's the thing that I would like to see shift and change in porn industries, is to have more Latinas who have more power, more control around their image, who are being paid fair, who have access to testing and condom use, and they don't have to negotiate not to use those with partners. And that, to me, is more important to examine personally, but that's also because I'm older and I've moved on to other things. And I think it's important to let younger people who are either watching and consuming porn currently to lead us in what needs to happen next. But at the same time, I value porn for my own personal enjoyment. So it's one of those, you know, difficult spaces to be in, to critique something that you really value and appreciate and that really affirmed my identity growing up. But it's a totally different can of worms than what we have right now, what I grew up with. So I think it's really complicated, and I don't have like an easy answer. But I totally understand when people don't like what they see. Because I don't like everything I see. But sometimes I kind of do. And sometimes stereotypes are hot to play with. And you can do it in a way that's consensual. And that's something that I definitely support.
Well, speaking of consent and kink, let's talk about this feature film project you're working on. It's called Black Pervert, and everyone should go watch. There's a preliminary trailer up on the website, blackpervert.com. So tell me more about the movie.
Sure. So Black Pervert is a feature-length documentary that hopefully will be out this time next year. And it focuses on the intersections of blackness and kink. And so what are the experiences of black people who identify as kinky and black people in the kink community? And so we've been doing a series of interviews talking with people about their experiences. And it really came about because myself and my co-director, who's also the producer, True, we both were looking for black kink community and we just didn't really find it. And we were wondering, where's everybody else? This can't just be our experience. And it's been a really amazing journey to just speak with people, travel, hear people's stories. We've had many black women who identify as submissive or switches. So they go, from submissive to a dominant position or role. And it's been unbelievable to hear black women speak about how they find healing through their kink and how they find more power in healing from traumatic experiences, or how they find a sense of liberation, how they come back to their bodies and their power and their strength through their kinks. And that to me is what's really fascinating, because we rarely ever get to hear black women talk about healing through sex, through kink, but also we rarely ever get to hear black women claim their pleasure, their sexual pleasure especially. So it's been an amazing experience so far.
And one of the things that struck me about the preview was that many of your subjects were sort of wrestling with this idea of the word pervert and whether to self-identify as a pervert, or if they did, or if they thought about it, or to reclaim that term or not reclaim. And why do you think that's especially a loaded term for people of color?
I think for many reasons. One, because it's still considered a slur in many different spaces and a derogatory form name calling. And I think for black people, we've been called names already so much that it's exhausting. And the work that goes into decolonizing a term like pervert, that's a lot of time and energy. And just like the efforts to claim the term black as a self-identifier, pervert is a term that there are people who struggle to embrace it, but it's also a similar embrace and a challenge like with the word queer. So there are older people who would probably never want to identify as queer. And then you have younger people who love the term. It identifies their sexual orientation, their gender, and everything else. So it's a really interesting dynamic to see people struggle or totally disregard and move away from the term, and to hear people who love it and why they love it and what it means to identify with such a powerful term that our society is still using to shame people, essentially, and to target people and identify people as criminals. So for us, it was a really important decision to choose a title that would not only be appealing or pique someone's interest, but to really have it be a term that speaks to the complexity of the black experience, because we wanted there to be a variety of black people and kinks represented versus just one or two examples that we already see in mainstream culture and media.
Mm-hmm. You touched on two things which come up in some of our questions from our listeners, criminality and sexual shame. So I want to jump to one of our listener questions. This one is from Polly Dallas, 2015. Hi, Ruby. And this person asks, how can we challenge the criminal status of black people and of trans women? Mm-hmm. And I think I would actually like you to take a step back and first define what this person even means by the criminal status, mm-hmm. and how women of color and trans women of color are criminalized, especially mm-hmm. around their sexuality, and then how we can challenge that.
Right. So what I hear, the things for me that come up when we talk about criminality, people of color, and the intersections of sexuality, are first, the easier ones to identify would be sex work and how people of color are involved in different types of sex work, which is a range. And I think your listeners are in the know enough to know what I mean by sex work. So I'm not going to define it unless you want me to.
No, that's good. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, you know, I think about sex work and how sex work is already criminalized in the United States. And if we have people of color who are in that field by choice or by, you know, constraints that they had to make that choice, whatever it is, it's another level of policing Black bodies and Black experiences and Black labor. I think also criminality comes up with how people are policed when it comes to whether it be racial profiling or profiling criminals in general. So profiling people who challenge a gender binary, and if they already have or are in a Black body, that's an additional double criminalization where people are challenging what we expect other people to present as and express their gender in very rigid ways. I also think of ways that women who enjoy their sex, their sexuality, Black women who take pleasure in that, how we're targeted in a very particular way. So how we're called names, how people use our sexual history in court to take our children away or to limit our abilities to access resources, whatever they may be, or to pay us less. I mean, there's a variety of different things that come up. And I think it's really a layered situation. And for me, I'm always invested in the Black community first and foremost. So I want to first begin to challenge our ideas as Black people around sex and sexuality, around queerness, around gender and expression first, and then build from the outside. So for me, I really want to do the work internally and then go externally, because it's hard shifting systems and the structural history of how, like, the justice system in the U.S. was created. That's, to me, is overwhelming. It's easier for me to target certain groups of people who are invested already in unlearning and learning new ways of discussing criminality, liberation, and Blackness.
Okay, we have to take another break. That went by really fast. I have more questions from you guys, so don't worry. And it's your last chance to call, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. We're going to take more of your listener questions after the break.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking today with sex educator and activist Bianca Loriano. And we have another listener question that came to us on Twitter. This one is from Amul Kumar, who says, how does sexual shame differ in different ethnic communities?
That's a really great question. And I think the way that shame shifts other ethnic communities is also based on cultural expectations and norms. So for example, my family migrated from Puerto Rico in the 70s, and my parents never were alone until their wedding night. They had chaperone dates, and that was a value that they came with to the United States, but it was something that they did not like, and so they chose not to uphold those expectations for my sister and I. However, other expectations definitely were upheld for us, like, abstinence, waiting to have sex, not necessarily until we were married. My parents very much supported cohabitation, but, that's a different type of, my parents are, I'm realizing now, anomalies when it comes to raising kids in the 70s and 80s, but there's a lot of other types of shame that are connected to, religion or connected to cultural practices or rites of passage. And those are the levels that intersect for many different people of ethnic identities and people of color. And then to add to that, the expectations that the United States has around sex and sexuality and how that differs for certain groups of people really disrupts and challenges people to figure out, like, what's my place in the world? What do I have the right to do with my body? And it is, I think, a really interesting space for a young person to be. It's one of the reasons why I'm so drawn to middle and high school age young people, because that's when they begin to question what's expected of them. So I think it varies. I don't think there's just one right answer, but I know what my experience has been and what I've witnessed in other communities as well that identify as Black and Latino and Caribbean.
So how do we, like, actually acknowledge these cultural differences between people, but not reinforce these stereotypes? I mean, one thing I read that you said in that Cosmo article was that there are lots of stereotypes about cultures and communities of color and the assumption that we have very rigid or static views of sex and pleasure, and that's not really accurate. So there are these prevailing notions about religiosity and how that affects sex and pleasure, or how Blacks and Latinos are more, quote, conservative, and that affects their sexuality. So how do we acknowledge these differences but not, like, fall into the trap of stereotyping?
Right. I think it's interesting. It's one of those complications where you're like, well, what does it mean if this stereotype is kind of true? Is it okay to recognize it? Is it okay to challenge it? And I think it really depends on the context and the space. So if I'm doing a training and I want people to be comfortable discussing how they grew up or what their experiences were, it's really important for me to allow there to be a space where everybody's voice counts and everybody's experience is witnessed and honored. It's different when people begin to talk about their experiences and claim that it's what everybody experiences. And that's one of the challenges. And there's a term that I usually teach my introductory to sociology course, and it's cultural relativism, where you interact with a culture where the culture is at and based on the cultural norms and expectations that are already there, versus bringing your own and expecting people to assimilate quickly to whatever values and beliefs you bring into another community. And that, to me, is incredibly important because it's about respect, it's about trust, and it's also just about building interpersonal relationships that are valid and that see people as human. So I don't think it's problematic to recognize that certain communities have challenges and struggle, and I definitely don't think it's problematic to ask questions. I think that we just need to be more intentional and compassionate when we do ask questions and when we are in communities and spaces of which we're not necessarily having membership. But I think it's okay to make certain observations and then to question them, because that's when we begin to recognize where maybe our own biases lie, and we begin a new level of knowledge production and of learning different ways to communicate with people. So I know for me, I'm still unlearning many different types of bias that I also have, because I just don't know certain things about many different communities. And it's important to me to be honest about that and to demonstrate that it's possible to not know and to unlearn and not be a jerk about it. So,
well, yeah, if we could all just be a little less than jerky about everything. Okay, let's talk about the production of knowledge, because I think one of the things that's happened in the past year that the Women of Color Sexual Health Network has been at the center of is calling out white supremacy in the sex education field. Mm-hmm. And this relates to a question I got by email from Shelley. And she says, the recent episode you did with Black Indigenous people of color, this is the one that took place at International Ms. Leather and talked about mm-hmm. racism in kink communities. Mm-hmm. It got me thinking about something that I get defensive about as a sex positive, white, cisgendered woman. That is when a person of color says that sex positive feminism is specifically harmful to women of color. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, sex positivity has been in many different communities. And I think we have this is a term that we're using. It's fairly new to identify what specific elements we're talking about when it comes to being positive and having positive understanding and expectations and beliefs around sex and sexuality. So I understand why there are people who believe that sex positive language and experiences are rooted in, you know, for lack of a better term, second wave feminisms, because it is rooted in a space of privilege for many people to say, you know, I'm going to have sex in this way and you need to respect that. I mean, that ability to say or to look at sex in a positive way is an experience that many people who carry a level of historical trauma with them around sex and violation and rape and whatever else might come up, just don't always have the access to. And so I think when people say that it hurts women of color, it's because it's still perpetuating and upholding this idea that only white women can be redeemed or only white women get to experience this pleasure. There's a really interesting book by a Haitian author that I actually really, really appreciate, even though it's very controversial. It's Danny Lafiere, and his book was How to Make Love to a Negro Without Getting Tired. And it was published in the 70s, and he has this theory that there's a hierarchy, a racial hierarchy, and at the top are white men, underneath them are white women, etc., etc., and at the bottom are black men, and underneath black men are black women. And his idea around sexual pleasure is that white men are always going to experience the most sexual pleasure because they're at the top of this racial hierarchy, and black women just won't ever because they're already at the bottom. So whoever's having sex, whatever identity they have, if they're higher up in this hierarchy, this racial hierarchy, the pleasure is going to be centered on them. And I think that's a really interesting example to help people understand why there may be resistance to sex positivity, because there are people who do believe that those dynamics are at work. And we probably can think of many examples of where we see that. And, you know, my idea of sex positivity is very much rooted in healing and in agency and us choosing for ourselves what we want and there being the space for us to desire whatever we want and not have to be told that we're wrong. And that's complicated and that's revolutionary because we're just not really there yet necessarily.
Well, on that note, we're out of time, but Bianca, you have really laid down the knowledge in this past hour, and I just really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Bianca Laureano is an award-winning Latinegra sexologist. You can find out more at her website, biancalaureano.com and latinosexuality.com. You can also find out about the Women of Color Sexual Health Network at WOCSHN.org. Follow Bianca on Twitter at Latinosexuality and the organization at WOCSHN. And they're also on Tumblr. You can always find me on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of the show or want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes. And I would love it if you could give us a review on iTunes. It really helps people find the show. So tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be artist Erica Moen, author of the website and the book, Oh Joy Sex Toy. She's an incredibly gifted illustrator and writer, and I think it's going to be a really fun show. So until then, you can go to facebook.com/asktristan. You can follow our Twitter stream at Sex Out Loud Radio and take some time to talk about these difficult subjects. They are difficult, but they are absolutely necessary. So talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.